Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 3:31 p.m. on Thursday, March 21st. We have Senator Tobin, Vice Chair Kaufman, Senator Dunbar, thank you, and Senator Geisel is expected, is on other state business, but we do expect her this afternoon. Myself, Senator Wilson, we do have a quorum to conduct business this afternoon. Our only item of business today is HB 89, Child Care Tax Credits and Assistance Grants, here by Rep. I'm always going to mispronounce your name. Cologne. All right. Who is here at the presentation table with her trusty staff, Ms. Preston. You guys want to go ahead and place yourselves on the record? You may begin. And for folks listening online, for committee members, it is quite a lengthy sectional, so we're just going to allow you to read that at your leisure, and it is on basis for folks that want to go through that wonderful long sectional, even though I think most of it's going to be covered here in the presentation today. Feel free to just bypass that sectional analysis. Thank you. Representative, the floor is yours.
Okay, so thank you, Chair Wilson. My name is Julie Colombe. I'm a representative for District 11, and just ask the committee's patience here. We've had a late night last night and lots going on this morning. So my name is Julie Colombe, and I have my staff here, Leah Preston, with me to present the bill as well. House Bill 89 is designed to help make Alaska more affordable for families. Part of that vision for Alaska is making childcare more affordable, more accessible, and higher quality. Child care is a workforce issue. Many Alaskans would return to work, take on more work, and become more reliable workers if we had more quality, affordable care. We are all aware of our workforce shortages and the outward migration of our young working families. The jobs are here, but for many reasons, including housing, education, training, and certainly the availability of child care, we face a workforce shortage. It's estimated that the lack of child care costs Alaskan employers $152 million in employee absences and turnover per year. This is an issue we can help solve. HB 89 is a call to the private sector to look at child care as an employee benefit, and to the public sector to update the way we support families and regulate the industry. As a member of the Governor's Task Force on Child Care, I've heard the problems that surround the child care sector. I've talked with private businesses that are open to and willing to help their employees with childcare, but don't know where or how to even start. I've talked with childcare facilities, both large and small, that have shared with me how cumbersome regulations have weighed them down in paperwork and keep their businesses from thriving. The recommendations that came from the task force address these issues. HB 89 moves the industry in the same direction as the task force recommendations. Our economy is desperate for workers, and our children are struggling to be ready to learn when they enter kindergarten. So what can government do to help with these problems? From my perspective, it's not the government's responsibility to provide childcare. However, it is my belief that government can create an environment that encourages businesses to offer childcare benefits. Government can remove burdensome and unnecessary regulations to make it easier for those who want to start a child care business, and also can encourage communities to create innovative choices for different kinds of care. Government can also assist parents who want access to child care for those who want or need assistance to grow their household income. My bill does not propose to spend a lot of short-term money, but to provide a long-term incentive for our communities to solve the problem. It strengthens the child care system in several ways. It creates a tax exemption for businesses for child care expenditures, expands the number of families who can access assistance by raising the income level to qualify, and raises the cap on the percentage of income a family spends on child care, provides an opportunity to align the assistance level to reflect the actual cost of care instead of using a market study, offers an option for the Child Care Program Office to give grants to high-performing, high-quality child care providers, and it provides the department will develop a sliding fee scale for families who increase their household income without losing all their child care assistance all at once. So in wrap-up, HB 89 will make Alaska more affordable for families by helping to create affordable, quality child care that that is accessible to families. It also is a call to the private sector to look at child care as an employee benefit and encourage people to open up child care facilities. As long as Alaska's energy, housing, groceries keep growing, keep increasing in price, parents will have to work to keep up. It's time for us to provide a smart solution to engage our partners in the private sector to help Alaskans in that effort. Thank you, Chair, and I'll turn it over to my staff for the presentation.
Hello, for the record, my name is Aaliyah Preston, and I'm a staffer for Representative Cologne. I will be presenting HB 89.
Click the slide.
You need to go to presentation.
There we go. Okay, sorry about that. HB 89 addresses a specific problem of lack of affordable quality child care. And because of that, it worsens the labor shortages because people cannot go to work. It endangers children, and it undermines families' economic securities, and therefore decreases workforce participation. What is the solution? However, HB 89 provides a solution to strengthen the child care sector, to improve access for families, and help parents to return to work. One might ask, why is Alaska in a child care crisis? We found, after visiting many child care providers, that like many industries, there were labor shortages, there were a declining number of child care providers, and there was low wages. However, HB 89 provides multiple approaches to solve this problem. It expands the number of families who can use child care assistance. It incentivizes tax breaks for employees to donate to child care facilities. It increases the maximum tax credit, and it aligns assistant level to reflect the actual cost of care.
And we're going to go back. And if you can just pause after each slide just a little bit to make sure there's no question that you have
okay.
each slide. We can go back to the... If we expand the number of families that can use child care assistance, are we just creating more of a demand without the supply?
Oh, through the chair, or to the chair, Chair Wilson. So there's a lot of different aspects to the problem of child care, and I wanted to make sure that we got moving on it. My bill, in a lot of ways, if you get the private sector infused, the capital infused from the private sector, I believe it will start creating more child care centers. Also, in the centers that we went to, many of them have the capacity, but they're empty because they don't have the staff. And so I'm trying to get another partner in this problem, the private sector, to start moving in that direction. I'm hoping first we'll fill up the spots in the current child care centers and then move on from there.
Sure. Not to steal the thunder, but just to add to that, one of the other testifiers is expanding her facility by twice as much. So she'll be on in just a few minutes. According to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Alaska is losing $152 million due to employee turnover and absences. So as we did our research for this bill, we noticed that we went to lots of different types of child care facilities, including those that had child care facilities in their place of business. We went to a bank that had one, and we found that it didn't just affect, the benefit of that did not just affect the parents that had the children, but the whole organization was able to see that it was profitable for everyone. Also, when doing our research for this bill, we discovered that assistance needed to be tied to the actual cost of care. Currently, the state rate is based on market rate study. The Alaska Department of Health is contracting with Ms. Kinley Group to complete the study by July 31st, 2024. However, this still must be approved by the federal government.
So, Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm not understanding. So is the Department of Health currently doing a market rate study, or are they doing a cost of care study?
Cost of care.
They're doing a cost of care study. And will this, excuse me, follow up? So then will this legislation be impacted by that cost of care study?
Through the chair to Senator Tobin. Yes, so the market rate study is a study of what is currently being charged for child care, which you probably know. The actual cost of care that is actually being implemented, originally last year in the bill, I had money towards the study, but the Department of Health absorbed it and started it. So that's what should be done July 31st. That will definitely impact things. And I think it will have probably, if this legislation passes, that will have to be discussed. Because right now, the subsidy is based on the market rate study. It would, just because the cost of care study is done, doesn't mean the state just automatically shifts to it. There's interactions with the federal government where they would have to approve their methodology and make sure that they get their rubber stamp. And then the state will have to decide, are we going to base the subsidies off the market rate or the cost of care?
Thank you. That's helpful.
Thank you. On the record, your flag, we're joined by Senator Kiesel. Do we know currently what sort of the market rate, or I guess why we're doing the market rate, but have we heard from centers, and maybe that's one of the invited testifiers that can talk upon sort of what the going rate is, or just the regular demand rate of the market rate now in Anchorage or within some of these areas comparative to what the state's paying?
To the chair, we have the Department of Health here that could probably speak to that later.
Okay, thank you.
How does HB 89 help solve our child care problem in Alaska? By changing who is eligible for assistance. I will explain the difference. Now, families up to 85 of the state's median income, which is roughly a little over $60,000, is eligible for assistance. This will change it to 105%, which will change the income from a little over $60,000 to $73,000, $950. It also will leave most of the middle class is not eligible for assistance. This will, the department will trade subsidies based on need. Before or now, currently, lack of affordable care produces a severe labor shortage in every industry. I think we've all seen the help wanted signs everywhere. HB 89 will expand the number of families who can afford care, and many more Alaskans will be able to go back to work. There is a 9% cap currently, and that will change to 7%.
Senator Dunbar, then Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that cap? What exactly is being capped?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar. So currently the 9% cap is 9% of their income, that the cost of their child care can't go above 9%. Currently, there's only about 7% of families actually using the subsidy that could use it. And we feel like part of the problem is that when you have multiple children, or you have a child care that is more expensive than what the subsidy really allows, it's getting too much. They don't have enough of a copay. I mean, their copay is getting too big. And so I worked with the department, and we're hoping that if you lower the cap, more families will participate. And that's, the raising of the threshold and that cap, I'm hoping we'll bump that 7% number up. That's a really low number for the families that could use it. And so that's the cap.
False, yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dunbar.
So two things, just so I understand. So 7%, if it's a 7% cap, does that mean that 93% of the 93% is paid for by the state, or 93% is paid for some other combination of payers? And then second, and you sort of hinted at this, but I didn't quite understand. Is it 7% per child? Does that make sense? Or is So it's a much larger subsidy then for a person with three kids versus a person with one kid. Is that right?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, yes. So the subsidy Right now, it's about, well, I should have the department speak to this because I'm working off the top of my head, but the subsidy, I would say right now, on average, is like $500 a month. Most child care centers are going to be $1,000 a month. That adjusts depending on what their income is. So you get more if you get a little bit more if your income is lower, and it'll go up a little bit. But most families, you know, they're getting $600 a month. The child care costs $900, maybe. So they have to pay that difference. But some of the issues that came up with the task force is because the cost of child care has gone even higher, so now that family has to pay that difference, that copay, plus any other difference to, so if your child care center costs $1,100, you've got to pay that extra additional $200. If the state says we allow $900 per month per kid, the state pays $500. So the rest of it is on the parent. And so especially with multiple children, the copay gets just untenable. And so you'll see, I mean, the department can speak to this, but it has been low. The participation rate in this program is lowering and lowering and lowering. And obviously in COVID, I mean, now we're in single digits. We're in 7%.
So I misunderstood. It's not 7% of the cost of childcare. It's that it can't exceed 7% of their income.
Correct.
So whatever the difference is, the state will make that up.
Right.
But hopefully 7% of their income will be, not equivalent or but less or more than $400 or $500. Mm-hmm. It won't be the full amount. So, okay, I understand. Thank you, Mr.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I think I'm confused. So I'm going to ask a clarifying question because I'm still trying to understand the structure of the program. And to caveat, I represent quite a few low and limited income communities, particularly communities that are making no dollars. Mm-hmm. So how would this impact a family that is unemployed, trying to get employed? How would they access the subsidy so that they can put their children in childcare and then go search for work or hopefully obtain work?
So through the chair to Senator Tobin, if you don't mind, I'd like the department to come up, and because I'm no expert on the child care program, but it's my understanding that they need to be working or looking for work to get the subsidy currently. But do you mind if we have the department come up, Chair? Or
let's go ahead and finish your presentation.
Okay.
And we'll come up because I'm sure there's lots of questions.
We'll get more details.
We'll let you finish your presentation and we can just parking lot that question, Senator Tobin.
Another key component to this bill is a child tax credit. Child tax credits mirror the tax credits from HB 223, and these people that are listed on the slides, these corporations, will be able to participate. Since this is an innovative bill, we won't know for sure exactly how they will affect the economy, but we expect them to work similarly to HB 223.
So I just put this in because this is a history the last couple of years of HB 223, which is the educational tax credit. So it just kind of gives you a little bit of a history. The child care tax credits are based off the educational tax credit. Right now, it's for educational tax credits 50-50-50, and I kept that in the child care tax credit as well. The cap I did change. Right now, the educational tax credit is $1 million, but I upped it to $3 million. When I talked to the Department of Revenue, it would have to be a combination. A business would be able to deduct it would be a combination of educational and child care credits up to the cap. And so I didn't want to take away from educational investment, and so I raised the cap to $3 million.
Okay, that concludes our presentation. There are a few things from the sectional analysis that wasn't included specifically in the presentation, so I just wanted to bring your attention to that. Section 22 and many of the sections is just conforming language that's changing daycare to childcare. through the task force and our visits with the child care centers, that was a recommendation made to up the just the statue of the people that were working there. They prefer to hear that, so we changed that. It was an easy fix that we could do for them. On section 33, it adds a new subsection as 47.25.71i to allow the department to award grants to child care facilities that are the highest performing and highest quality. And section 39 says it amends session laws SLA chapter 61 and 2014 and 2018 SLA chapter 40 to change the effective date of January 1st, 2028. Fishery education tax credits expired but was extended in section 39 of the bill. Section 40, it is an effective date clause that takes effective on the day after the date of the United States Department of Health and Human Services approved the plan. And section 41 is effective date, effective immediately.
Thank you, Senator DeGiesel.
So I have a question back on section 33. So highest performing and highest quality, kind of vague. Maybe there's some real measures. What are they?
Yeah, through the chair to Senator DeGiesel. Thank you for the question. One of our invited testimony is THREAD, and they can speak to that. But I will say there are THREAD does many many things like the SEED program that they have standards. It's based on education. Their program is based around educational activities, nutrition, safety, and so she could speak to it more detailed than that. But that's what that's based off of.
Thank you very much. Thank you, sure. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar and Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm looking at the fiscal note here. I'm trying to reconcile it with the language in the bill. Mm-hmm. So unless there are multiple and I'm reading the wrong one, this says 4.8 million reduction in tax revenue. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Mm-hmm. What's that?
Yes.
That seems like a relatively small amount. I mean, if you're increasing the cap for one company's write-off from 1 million to 3 million, we've got to think this applies to multiple companies.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm curious, why do we think it would be such a small change in revenue? I mean, is it only a couple of companies in the whole state that are going to do this? It seems like if multiple companies took advantage of this, you'd get a much larger reduction in corporate tax income.
And we do have Brandon Spenos, the acting tax director, online as well.
Okay, I'd like to direct this to him then, if I could.
Mr. Spenos, are you online?
Yes, for the record, Acting Tax Director Brandon Spenos. And I would direct you to page 2 of, or rather, sorry, through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I direct you to chair page 2 of our fiscal note. It has a little table there. And there's three components to our analysis. The first part being the expanding this to child care facilities, and that section is indeterminate. We just don't have the data or know how many taxpayers are currently already paying for child care services or paying their employees amount that could go towards child care. So that's indeterminate, and that would be that additional revenue deduction that we would anticipate. The second piece is extending the repeal date. And then the third part would be, the second is to raise the annual credit from the current 1 million to 3 million, and then expanding the repeal date beyond the January 25 current date. So there is an indeterminate part in there.
Can I follow up? So it sounds like from how you describe the first change, we might end up paying more for things that are already happening. I mean, are we sure this is going to lead to an increase in the number of folks that can access this? But also, I guess, can you give us, I know it's an indeterminate fiscal note, but can you give us a sense of the scale? Are we talking hundreds of thousands of dollars? Are we talking millions? Are we talking tens of millions? What's the general scale here?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, there is a cap at the $3 million cap, and so that would be the limit of what could be used per taxpayer. And so our estimates, we're pretty confident in, based historical use of the education tax credit, which this would basically be expanding the current tax credit. So when we combine two and three together, really that is the, if you were to look at it just as expanding the credit to the 3 million from 1 million to 3 million and then allowing, or rather extending the credit itself beyond the repeal date, we're confident in the numbers that are provided there. But as far as expanding beyond that into the childcare realm, it would cap at the 3 million per taxpayer. And what we could do is provide the committee, if 100% of the credit was used by, you know, some percentage of historical use for education tax credit, what would that look like? Or we could also look at what if every C corporation filing a tax return were to use the credit to the capacity that they have. So obviously, if they only pay $100 in tax, they could only use $100 in credit. But we could look at that as well.
Right. Yeah, I would appreciate some more data. I'm also curious just how many companies in Alaska right now pay $3 million in corporate income taxes. I would guess that it's less than 100, but I could be wrong. And I'd love to have that data. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chair, I'm sorry. Can I just add something to Senator? Okay. Thank you, Chair. So one of the reasons why we kept the sunset date only 3 years out was for that reason, because it was indeterminate. We don't know how much this is really going to cost. And so, I mean, it would be up to the committee on what you want to do with that date. It's supposed to sunset or be looked at again in 28. But because it's such a new thing to enter into, that's the way I try to mitigate that, just concerns of how much that would actually be. And also the I think we got a list. I don't think we have it today, but I did look up we asked about the number of people that pay the corporate income tax. So the corporate income tax, mining license, fishery business, fishery resource, oil and gas, are the taxes that could be deducted. So you're right that it's probably, you know, large corporations that could go all the way up to the 3 million cap. But there are many companies that pay an corporate income tax. But I think probably you could probably get that from the department better than I. But I just wanted to know that was a concern, what Senator Dunbar had said, and that's kind of how I tried to mitigate it, was to keep the sunset date kind of close.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm struggling a little bit with the intersection between the education tax credit and the changes. I know there's other bills also being considered that returns the tax credit to the pre-2018 numbers. There are some that are trying to abolish the sunset date. I'm just hopeful that you might be able to help expound a little bit more so I can understand how all these pieces are trying to kind of fit together.
Great. So through the chair to Senator Tobin, so you're not wrong. There is several pieces of legislation dealing with the education tax credit. I think, you know, and I've seen committees on those other bills, and this is a question like, what if this passes before that or whatever? I think we're just going to have to wait to see if and when who passes the finish line first. So Representative Ruffridge is proposing to eliminate the sunset, but keep the 1 million tax cap. And I think the bill in the Senate is to extend the sunset, but push up the cap. So I think it's kind of I'm no expert, but I would say what has been answered before is that if this goes first, it kind of eliminates the need for Representative Ruffridge's bill. And the other one, the only issue would probably be, do we want to eliminate the sunset totally? And I don't think too many people feel comfortable doing that with this, just because of that unknown.
Yes, I think that's an ongoing conversation, and I think it's going to be a combination of a little bit of ideations. Mm-hmm. Any further questions for the bill sponsor before we go to invited testimony?
I just have one.
Yes, Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Klum, in your opening statements, I thought I heard you saying that there are, in some cases, requirements were somehow getting in the way of a robust business climate. And I'm just wondering, still studying this, is there anything in here that removes impediments? I've commented before that other states seem to have a pretty robust freelance childcare network, you know, little something daycare, you know, just in a neighborhood. And so do you have any thoughts on how this bill addresses that area of improvement? And if not, what we might do as well?
So through the chair to Senator Coppin, thank you for that question. So I learned a lot on the Child Care Task Force about what's happening with the paperwork and the regulations. Through those meetings and a lot of meetings with Commissioner Hedberg, we felt like a lot of those issues can be solved at her level. There was I introduced this last year, and I intentionally paused it because I knew the task force would be meeting, and I thought if there's something we can add or something we discover that need to be changed, then I have an opportunity to do that. With the main problems that they're having is with the background checks, the licensing, and some of the paperwork problems with, so like the department as it stands, you know, they have a PDF of forms. They have to print them out. They have to fill them out. They got to mail them. So those are barriers to not only, you know, rural Alaska, but everybody who does that. So my bill, the one thing that we did do is that it puts someone in the department, the child care office, a liaison, if you will, to help businesses walk through the how to offer child care benefit, basically. So if I'm a business and I say, well, I can't build a child care center in my business, what are my options? What can I do? How do I help my employees, you know, apply for subsidies? Like, to walk them through how they could create a child care benefit. So we did do that to make that connection. But as far as the burdensome, the regulations, not a lot of that is in my bill. That's being addressed with the commissioner. And if you look at the task force recommendations, they have very specific things that they're doing to try to streamline that paperwork and try to make it easier to open a child care center. And also there's some ratio issues and some things that on the surface don't look like a big deal, but they're a big deal to make a child care center survive there financially. So a lot of those will, I mean, for me, because I represent Anchorage, and they're the only place that can actually license child care. The rest of the child care centers are licensed by the state. So I've been working with the child care office in Anchorage and trying to come up with some ideas and things we could do in Anchorage. But that's separate from something I would do in my bill.
Thank you.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to go back to the child care tax credit just because it's, I know this bill is not going to go to education, and knowing quite a bit about what we've been trying to flesh out with the education tax credit, from my understanding, only a few organizations are able to utilize the tax credit and then also apply the tax credit. And we've been having some interactions with legislative legal about trying to open it up for additional organizations, nonprofits, to be able to access. And I'm curious if you're running into similar issues with the shifts or the changes that you've outlined in this bill, knowing that we've had difficulty adding additional lines of ability to use a tax credit for additional application. Are you having similar experiences?
Through the chair to Senator Tobin, if I'm understanding you right, you're saying the problem is what can apply to the educational or what organization can apply?
Both what organizations are able to use the tax credit, mm-hmm. And then also what it can apply to.
Right.
We're having difficulty with our working with that component, and I know that that is in finance now and they're talking about it, but it seems to have some rub there.
So through the chair to Senator Tobin, right now it's difficult for me to say what we're going to have difficulty with because we haven't tried yet. I mean, the bill has some very specific things that people can deduct, but as time goes on, if it passes, you know, we may have to adjust those things and make it easier. I mean, the educational tax credit's been around for a while, and it's had some changes over time, and so I anticipate that with the with the child care part of it too.
All right. Seeing no further questions, we're now going to go to our invited testifiers. We'll open invited testimony. And first up, we have Dr. Jessica Parker, superintendent for Little Mountain Movers.
Hello. My name is Dr. Jeff Parker. I am the I oversee the operations for Little Mountain Movers Academy and Mountain City Christian Academy here in Anchorage, and I'm reaching out to share my enthusiastic support for House Bill 89. We are deeply entrenched in childcare and educational services, the whole scene here, and I'd love to share with you just some of the challenges that we're facing, many of you, them of which you guys have been discussing in depth. The first is the demand for daycare, especially for infants, is skyrocketing. It's leaving us with a mile-long wait list. We just received a capacity increase for 300 kids, but the regulations are holding us back in being able to open up our doors fully. Currently, we have 120 kids, and close to 100 are on our wait list, with the wait list being about a year and a half. Half of those being infants. And here's the snag. The staffing and the space requirements for infants are high, making it the toughest spot for us to open up, and it's the spot that is needed most. But I've been hearing you guys are working on that, but I'm here to talk about how Bill 89, this could be a game changer. You guys are tweaking the daycare assistance and the child care grant program. This will help ease the pressure by bumping up the income threshold for families and qualifying and adjusting grants based on actual costs and local needs. This is a step in the right direction. So I'm all for recognizing the diverse needs across our different regions, especially in a place that is as unique as Anchorage. And this bill acknowledges this reality right here on the ground and offers solutions that could really make a difference. So hats off to the legislature for tackling this bill head on. I'm behind it, and let's push for more initiatives like it. Thank you for listening.
Are there any questions for Ms. Parker, Dr. Parker? Seeing none, I just want to say thank you for being available and providing your testimony this afternoon. Next, we'll go to Stephanie Berglund, the CEO of Thread Alaska.
Thank you, Chair Wilson and the committee, for hearing HB 89. My name is Stephanie Berglund. I'm the CEO of Thread. We're Alaska's child care resource and referral organization. We're to strengthen access to affordable and high-quality early childhood education with a focus on child care. We serve more than 10,000 families each year, 2,000 early educators, and over 400 early childhood education programs. The childcare sector is fragile. It's long been a sector with institutional deficiencies for decades, really, and we've seen increased challenges over the last 4 years. Since 2020, we've seen now over 25% of the licensed childcare programs close across the state. And of those that are open, they're not able to serve all the children they would like due to staffing shortages. Thread anticipates more childcare programs to close if we don't see sustainable and meaningful investment and policies from the state for childcare. The childcare workforce is struggling due to low wages and few benefits at the same time when there is high competition for qualified workers in Alaska. Currently, fewer families can access affordable and quality child care services than ever before. When we don't have a strong child care sector, we see our economic infrastructure struggle. Businesses are not able to recruit and retain quality employees, and families are not able to participate in the workforce as they want. Our most recent research and data conducted in partnership with the Alaska Chamber and the McKinley Group has shown that businesses are greatly impacted by families struggling with child care, including poor attendance and loss in productivity. Child care challenges for working families are resulting in absences and employee turnover that cost businesses an estimated $152 million annually. When Alaskans can't work, they don't have the financial security to support their families. They aren't able to achieve their self-sufficiency goals, and they aren't able to contribute to the economy. This not only stifles the quality of life for families, but this also stalls Alaska's growth. HB 89 adds incentives for businesses to support childcare and strengthens the childcare assistance and subsidy programs. While there are many areas of the childcare system that need support, you're already talking about many of them, HB 89 aims to strengthen the childcare assistance by allowing more families to participate in the program and creates flexibility in childcare resources with aims to support childcare programs with the targeted supports they need. Changes in childcare assistance are needed. Currently, as you heard, too few families participate in the program as they don't qualify or can't access the resources under the current structure. Families utilizing childcare assistance pay a copay for services in addition to the cost differential of tuition fees. These and other barriers are impacting families' ability to participate in the workforce. Just over half of families, 51% in a recent survey that we did, report that household members' ability to be employed or work more hours are impacted by quality, availability, or cost of childcare. This is a large change from the same survey we conducted in 2019, where only 22% of family surveys reported that childcare barriers are impacting their ability to be employed or work as much as they would like to. So that's a 29% increase in families not able to work due to childcare. These findings underscore the need for childcare change to strengthen our collective workforce and economy. One lever of change is through HB 89 and increasing the childcare assistance access. This bill will allow more families to qualify and thus allow more families access to the quality childcare they need. Additionally, childcare businesses are currently reimbursed at childcare assistance program rates set by the market rate survey. That's based on the amount childcare businesses charge for care, not what it actually costs to provide quality care and education. This creates an unstable foundation for the childcare system. THREAD is encouraged to see current research underway to understand the true cost of care, and we look forward to seeing the data and are encouraged to see that the bill includes the option for the cost of care to be used in conjunction with market rate prices in policy and fiscal planning for the child care support. Considering that true cost of providing child care in our policies will inform a more stable child care system. As HB 89 advances, I encourage the committee and all policymakers to also consider additional investments needed to support the supply of child care. As I stated, HB 89 is a great and necessary step for supporting families' affordability, but we must also ensure families who qualify for assistance have a place to go for care and utilize the benefit. THREAD is endorsing HB 89 as it is a key step forward for more affordable access to care for families. THREAD encourages legislators to consider and pass this bill this session. This positive change for the child care sector cannot come soon enough. I appreciate the sponsor for bringing this bill forward and thank the chair and committee for considering the bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and thank you for your time and support for the young children and families in Alaska.
Are there any questions for this invited testifier? I do have one. What would you say is the percentage of child care facilities taking in child care assistance clients in terms of a payer mix in their facilities?
Thank you to the chair. I don't know that direct exact number. Maybe the department does if they're there on hand, but I can tell you that most do, close to between 80 and 90% of programs do accept and enroll child care assistance and utilize that subsidy system. It also allows them access to the child care grant program that you heard about earlier. And that is an additional benefit and resource for them through that program.
Thank you. I was just looking to try to get a quantifiable number, but we'll ask the department a little later if they may have those numbers. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Stephanie, for your testimony. I'm curious because I know one of the pieces that often comes up when we talk about child care providers is a living wage and ensuring that they have they're being paid and compensated for the work that they do, and they also have the training that we hope folks who are caring for our most vulnerable should have to do that work. How do you see this bill intersecting with that need within the community?
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Tobin. This bill allows for increased supports for quality childcare. So when we are helping to increase the childcare assistance to offset those costs for families, we also know that the childcare businesses will be provided with more stable supports and income that we hope and know that usually translate to providing supports for their personnel. In the childcare business model, the largest expense is personnel costs, you know, both wages and benefits. So we know that when there are additional supports for programs, and we saw this, for example, through a lot of the COVID-19 relief that was provided to childcare businesses, that most of them spent that on personnel and support. So we know that increased supports to programs means, you know, oftentimes additional supports and resources so programs can spend it where they need it. And those increased costs don't always translate to increased costs for families, which is what we're trying to keep low.
Thank you. And again, thank you for being available this afternoon. Our last invited testifier is Jen Griffith with Alaska Children's Trust, the Vice President of Policy and Advocacy.
Good afternoon, Chair Wilson and committee members. My name is Jen Griffiths. I am Vice President of Policy and Advocacy at Alaska Children's Trust. Alaska Children's Trust is pleased to offer our strong support for House Bill 89, which would expand access to child care assistance for parents. As the statewide lead organization focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect, we support policies that increase economic security for families and provide foundational early education support for children. House Bill 89 does both by increasing access to quality, affordable child care for Alaska's families. Currently, the average family in Alaska is paying 15 to 35% of their income for child care, and 51% of families say they can't participate in the workforce to the extent they would prefer due to child care issues. According to Kids Count 2023, Alaska ranks 44th in the nation for economic well-being, and 34% of Alaska children have parents that lack secure employment. House Bill 89 would increase the eligibility limit for child care assistance, allowing more Alaska families access to affordable child care and providing more parents the opportunity to participate in the workforce. Parents who are able to access the child care they need report reduced stress and increased economic stability, both important societal factors for decreasing the risk of child abuse and neglect. And quality child care allows children to grow and develop to their full potential, increasing their readiness for school and eventually the workforce. While House Bill 89 does not solve all of the challenges currently facing Alaska's child care system, it is an important step towards revitalizing our child care sector in a way that supports our children, families, communities, and businesses. We encourage your support for House Bill 89. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Ms. Griffiths, for being available this afternoon. We will now, at this time, open to public testimony. Is there anyone here in the room in Juneau that would like to testify on HB 89? Seeing none, we'll go to the folks online. We do have Brianna Garcia de la Cruz. If you could place yourself on the record and take a couple of minutes to go through your testimony.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Brianna Garcia de la Cruz. I'm a program director at Thrive Alaska, a nonprofit child care center in Fairbanks. Today I'm testifying on behalf of the Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group in support of House Bill 89. The Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group is a group of 9 nonprofits from across the state that have joined together to advocate for increased investment and improved policies to support Alaska's childcare sector. Childcare in Alaska continues to struggle. Over 51% of families are not participating in the workforce to the extent that they would like due to the lack of childcare. The average childcare worker makes $29,500 per year, which is less than a gas station attendant. And the average Alaska family pays 15 to 35% of their income for childcare. Childcare programs across the state continue to close, negatively impacting our children, families, communities, businesses, and our economy. While House Bill 89 will not solve all of the challenges facing the child care sector, it is a step in the right direction. By increasing the eligibility limit for families accessing child care assistance support, for both parents and child care programs. And the business tax credits for child care will encourage businesses to invest in child care options for their employees. The Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group encourages you to support House Bill 89 as an important step towards transforming Alaska's child care sector, supporting children and families, and benefiting our economy. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this afternoon. Seeing no one else online, if anyone else would like to provide any comment, they can by writing to our email address at shss@akleg.gov. We're going to go ahead and close public testimony. At this time, we'd like to invite the department up to the table to answer a few questions that have been stated. We have Ms. Hillary Potter, the deputy director for the department, in the room, and we have Amber Mavis, the program coordinator care for the child care program office, online as well. And I believe we'll start off with Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions, and I am happy if you have to come back with written comments, so please feel free to punt. My first question is around, and I'm trying to find it online and I can't, but what are the qualifications for a quality child care program? What are the curricula requirements? What does the classroom environment need to look like? What are the developmentally appropriate expectations, the training, kind of that idea of when we say quality child care, what do we mean by quality child care?
Yeah, thank you. For the record, Hillary Porter, Deputy Director for the Division of Public Assistance. And if it's okay, I think that is something I'd like to respond later in writing and give you a really good explanation of what that looks like.
Thank you. And I know one of my favorite programs, excuse me, follow up.
Please continue.
One of my favorite programs that I've been looking at is the Multnomah County, where they have done a preschool for all model, where they have the benchmark of a high quality program to receive additional funds. So ensuring that the public's funds are being used to prepare those young kids for preschool and for kindergarten. Which gets me to my second question, which is how this might dovetail with Head Start programs. What's the intersection between child care and Head Start access? Do we mirror what Head Start families are provided within the state system? What does that sort of look like? And I'm happy for you to come back.
For the record, the reporter, Deputy Director of Public Assistance, through the chair, Senator Tobin. Again, yes, if it's all right, I would like to get back to you after the fact on that.
Thank you. Final question, yes. Mr. Chairman. And so then my third question is around accessibility and access. One of the things I really love about that Portland program is that they ensure that every child has access, regardless of socioeconomic status, ethnic background, disability status. And what are our requirements by using state funds to support these programs? Will we be ensuring that same level of accessibility and access? Or do we already do that with this child care assistance program that we currently have?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I think that is also part of what the Governor's Task Force on Child Care is really focused on, increasing access and how the state can do that, how the department can support that effort. And besides that, I'll get back to you with more information.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to share that as we use the public's funds, that everyone in the public is able to access these programs. Thank you.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a little bit out of left field, but one of our testifiers made me think of it, and I'm curious about the program. So Article 7, Section 1 of Alaska's Constitution says, no money shall be paid from public funds for the direct benefit of any religious or other private educational institutions. So, you know, obviously we have religious organizations that run some of these programs. How do we ensure that the public funds aren't going to religious instruction in early, you know, in these daycare programs?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, that's a very good question. I'm not sure how to answer that, but I'd be happy to kind of look into that and get back to you.
And that's actually not really And this bill, this program already exists, so this bill expands this, doesn't change the fundamental nature of the program. So I'm just curious about that. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I do have a question. So I'm just wondering, what is the percentage of child care assistance enrollees in terms of percentage of clientele in child care facilities? Just trying to see what sort of the payer mix is for, in looking at your market-based studies, are we looking at the cost of care and to see, is it the state that has the majority that are making or breaking the payments for some of the child care facilities? Because it seems that we have such a really high demand for child care facilities in the state, but yet we're closing some and just don't understand sort of the supply and demand there. Unless, you know, more than 60-70% are on the state, and then our market paying is not as the same as fair market rate, and trying to make sure we have affordable, accessible care. And then will this market study also show what's the sort of upper bounds of limits that just the average families that are in this that do not qualify are willing to pay for child care? Are we going to address, or is the study going to address any of those issues, or do we have any of that type of data to sort of get a better market understanding of child care facilities in our state? Or is that something the task force was looking at? I'm just trying to get a better just economic handle on the business acclimate of child care facilities within the state of Alaska.
Thank you to the chair. I think part of the hope is that we will get some of that data and that real analysis out of the cost of care study that the McKinley Group is doing, that will look at more than just the rate that is charged to families. That study has a couple more months to go before we get the final report. So hopeful that maybe we can answer some of those questions at that time.
Do we know what the sort of the payer mix is for some of these the child care facilities? Do we know if the state of Alaska is 50%, 30%, 70% of the enrollees in the child care facilities that we currently are paying? I mean, we sort of know with your licensing sort of their caps, and so we should know those facilities on how much or how many enrollees we would have in those programs.
I was going to, if you don't mind, to the chair, I could add a little bit of what I've researched. And we did, just so you know, that Leah Van Kirk had to leave on a family emergency. She's usually the department person that's here. It's knowledgeable. She's on the task force. So that's why we have to get back with you, or the department will probably have to get back with you on some of these questions. But we visited a lot of child care centers. I would say there was a mix. We had one child care center that was like 70% of their kids were on a subsidy. And I had other child care centers, it went all the way down to 5 out of 30. So it kind of, we couldn't see a real pattern like every child care center did this. But part of it was what area I was in of Anchorage. But some of them I found when I've talked to the child care, the owners of the business, there seems to be a solid piece there that they know that the subsidy is coming in. And once they usually help the parent, you know, apply for the subsidy. But it creates kind of a stability in their operations, I would say. So it's not, you know, it's not a cost of care study, but I would say, I mean, we went to a lot of child care centers and there were, I would say minimum of 25% of their kids were on some kind of subsidy.
Oh yeah, and that's sort of the reason, just trying to see how sort of the business models are for some of these centers and see sort of how interplay and how reliant or dependent, or just to see how the state plays a role in these entities and success or failure of these entities as well. So I'm just trying to get a better understanding as the rationale for the line of questioning.
Yeah. So to the chair, Wilson, if I may. So there was mentioned those child care grants. We did a lot of questioning around those grants because the legislature gave $7.5 million last year and they still had COVID money. And so I asked child care centers. So this is the kind of the debate on the wages that is happening in the task force. Some want to subsidize the wages, and I don't prefer to do that. Part of the reason why I don't want to do that is what I found out in the field when I talked to child care centers. When they got those grants from COVID, the intention was that it goes to wages. I found that most did not send them to wages. One bought a van, one fixed their roof, one bought equipment. So you can't make them go to wages. You would hope that that's what they would want to do, and some did. Some helped with training, which was great. But I think it's kind of hard to make sure that that block of money is going to where you think it's going. And so I think the grants are really helping the centers for sure. They all expressed, especially through COVID, many of them, that's how they stayed open. But I was surprised that there wasn't that many that I had visited that actually went to wages. And I think in the second round, they were supposed to, there was intent language to help parents pay for their payment. And I didn't find anybody did that. But there were some that had help with training or wages. But a lot of it went into other things.
That brings up a question. A couple of weeks ago, we met with some independent caretakers, and we've raised those rates twice, and they came in saying that they were hopeful that those rate increases were going to go toward wages. Now, there's federal legislation pending that we have a 50% rule, and now they want to turn that to 80% of those payments will go to wages. Is the department looking at any regulatory or looking for statutory changes to say that so much of the rate payment of child care would go toward rates?
For the record, Hillary Porter, Deputy Director, Division of Public Assistance. Yes, we are looking at amending licensing regulations as well as child care assistance regulations. We're in that process.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions for the department or the bill sponsor? All right. Any closing comments from the bill sponsor?
To the chair, thank you so much for listening to the bill. I know in feedback that everybody wants to fix all the issues happening right now. And I just want to say that this is a piece of the solution. Trying to bring in the private sector and trying to fix the subsidy part. There's little tweaks here and there, but I'm really confident the Commissioner of Health is really on it on the regulation licensing. And I think there's going to be a couple of pieces here that need to happen to make it kind of float the boat. But thank you so much for listening.
All right. Thank you. At this time, we'll set this bill aside for consideration at a later date. Amendments are due to my office by noon on April 2nd. That concludes our business for this afternoon. On Tuesday, the 26th, we'll have an initial hearing on SB 231, Minors and Residential Psych Treatment Centers by Senator Klayman. And then under bills previously heard, we will continue work on SCR 9, Mental Health Substance Abuse Assistance Parity by Senator Dunbar. Are there any members closing comments? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 4:35 p.m.